Welcome to the Sunday Poems. I'm Ken Hayda. Thank you for joining me today, episode number 160. Today I'm reading from a brand new book just recently published. The book is titled Ronin, Mostly Prose Poems. The author is Paul Juhas and is published by Fine Dog Press. It's a lovely collection with some insightful reflections by the author. I'd like to read a handful of them for you today. The first one is titled Barn Cat, and it's a poem that contains a topic that I've been dealing with lately myself. Barn Cat. The problem with barn cats is that none of it is genuine. When the cat runs to me in excitement every morning, it's just because I usually have food. More food than you're supposed to give a barn cat, according to my friends. But it's not real affection. And the seductive purring, the passionate rubbing against your leg, all of it is nothing more than fondness one feels for a favorite waiter. Of course, I know this. Know this as I begin shopping at Petco. Know this when I think how nice it would be if the cat was inside tonight, curled up beside me on the couch. Know this when I get up 15 minutes early just to spend some time with the cat before I go to work. I know all this. But I also know I'll miss her when she stops showing up. I know that until that day, I'll hope and I'll dream we'll be there every morning to feed, to stroke, to share. Because it doesn't matter if her affection was just for show, was just about survival. What matters was that mine was real. Barn cat. As I said, I can relate to this. I had a stray cat dumped on me just recently. I must confess, however, that sometimes my affection is not always real, but I'm trying. The next poem is titled Visiting Fort Wagner. And this poem alludes to an historical event where you had a white officer from Massachusetts, the Massachusetts 54th, leading a group of black soldiers in the Civil War, made famous by the really powerful movie Glory. This is visiting Fort Wagner. There are no parking lots. You have to park in a residential cul-de-sac and walk half a mile to the beach. There are no gift shops. Consider, even Walden Pond has a gift shop. There's not even a placard. Actually, there is one about local shorebirds and their nests. I was prepared for the fact that Morris Island and the side of the fort is underwater, the Atlantic filling in for sandburg grass, whitewashing the landscape of the heroic and the horrible. But I was not prepared for nothingness. Nothing that celebrates, indicates, fabricates, nothing that breathes what happened here. Nothing of Robert Gould Shaw or the 54th Massachusetts, nothing of their brave assault on the Confederate fort, nothing of the proof, clear and incontrovertible, that all men were created equal, that black lives do indeed matter. Shaw's parents said of the mass grave here, where Shaw was buried, to the mocking delight of Confederate soldiers, quote, with his niggers, they laughed, that there was, quote, no holier place for their son to be. But this holy place is now under 40 feet of ocean water, near a narrow, unmarked stretch of sand, erased from the landscape by nature, and from our minds by choice. As I sit on a rock and ponder this erasure, this void, a man approaches, several cotton t-shirts slung over his shoulder. He asks if I'd like to buy one. To save the lighthouse, he adds, pointing to a thin strip of land jutting into the water at the end of which stands a frail, lonely, desolate structure intended to guide a people who no longer come for guidance. You're too late, brother, I reply. The lighthouse is already gone. The next poem is titled Hermit. What does the crab feel, I wonder, as it leaves its old shell. It was close and cramped, surely, or else why would he leave it? But it was also safe, habitual. And what are those moments in between shells? Does he feel liberated, released from the tight confines that stifled? Or does he feel terribly exposed, naked, unmasked? What does he think of his new shell? Does it excite him? Does he see it in opportunities for new growth? Or is it just a bigger place in which to hide? Eighth ring. They thought of everything here. Guacamole long since crusted and gray, forced conversations framed by silences more agonizing than awkward, IKEA furniture haphazardly assembled, Michael Bolton cycled and recycled and recycled and recycled and recycled interminably, the cheap beer is warm and stale, no candles in the bathroom, the door to which does not close. All smells, sights, and sounds filtered through an atmosphere of dog hair, ubiquitous and suffocating. And the clocks, of course, are all broken. Who knew damnation could be so boring? And as you are inferring probably by listening to these, the author is a transplant to Oklahoma, a relatively new citizen. And I want to conclude this reading this morning with his really wonderful poem, How to Write an Oklahoma Poem. Start with red earth. You don't have to call it earth, though. You can refer to it as clay, dirt, or dust if you like. But it has to be red, and it has to get under your fingernails. This is metaphoric, signifying a connection to you and the land that is symbolic. You could, I suppose, have the dirt adhere to your boots instead, but this is a weaker metaphor, one apt to be misconstrued. Better stick with the fingernails. Put the wind in your poem. It can be a howling wind, a twisting wind, a soothing wind, as you prefer. Depending on the ideas you wish your poem to express, it can whip across or scour or scream down Oklahoma's red earth, see above. It can be cold or suffocating or nourishing. It can mush your hair, blow off your baseball cap, or engulf you in a warm embrace. But that wind has hurtled its way all the way from Canada or Mexico just to be with you today. So the least you can do is include it in your poem. There has to be a mention of the sky. What you do with the sky is, of course, up to you. You're the poet, after all. You can have clouds in it that roll or roil in whatever hues you like. You can fill it with birds if you wish. You can even throw a tornado in it, although that tends to change, sometimes radically, the tone of a poem if you're not careful. But the one thing your sky must be is vast, endless even, with vistas that seem to promise more than they can give, even after they've given it. Speaking of birds, your Oklahoma poem must have a scissor tail in it. I'm sorry, but there's usually no leeway on this one. Now, before those poets with other aviary favorites get all up in arms, you are more than welcome to populate your poem with hawks or owls, and there's a short list of other acceptable birds one could use. All I'm saying is that you have to have a scissor tail in it as well, even if you just throw it in the corner of your poem, like Icarus in that Bruegel painting. As for terrestrial matters, your poem should have a buffalo in it as well. Whether a lot of buffalo or a single old bull, forlorn and majestic, or both, it's up to you. And feel free to call them buffalo. Some pencilhead academic somewhere will write a paper highlighting your zoological ignorance, noting that buffalo refers to old world species in Asia and Africa, only distantly related to those thunderous beasts of the American plains. But that's okay. Academics need to write stuff too. Pepper your poem with place names. Tahlequah, Tishomingo, Wetumpka, Wewoka. revel in the harmony of the words and in the depth of the voices who said them first. But the most important step to writing an Oklahoma poem is to distill yourself into its lines, because when you do, when you let your soul run free within it, when you are no longer writing so much as you are translating, when first principles are whispered through you, then at its very core, the center where the spirit is fed, your poem pulses with the understanding that every poem written this way is an Oklahoma poem. So that's Ronan, prose poems from Paul Juhasz, just recently published by Fine Dog Press. I hope you can pick up a copy of this really excellent work. I'm Ken Hayda. You can find out information about my books and my public appearances and other information about me at kenhayda.org. Until next week, I'm Ken Hayda with the Sunday Poems.